dance with me, baby? Baby, do you wanna dance with me? Listening to the Steve Probst 45 show out of the studios of WPMD, Cerritos College, Norwalk, California. It's the Steve Probst 45 show. Special guest today, Mark Guerrero of Mark and the Escorts. Let's listen to Mark and the Escorts. Mark and the Escorts, Get Your Baby. Nowhere in that song do I hear those particular lyrics, Get Your Baby. Wait. Excuse me. Okay, go ahead.
I don't know where the title came from, but anyway. It was recorded by three different groups, Mark and the Escorts, the Blundells, and the Premieres all did versions of it. I think it was originally written by guys from the Mixtures.
Yeah. So that song has a long pedigree, and no one can figure out the title.
And the other interesting thing that I enjoy is that, as I mentioned to you earlier, it's on four different compilation CDs today. It's been, in fact, it even was included in this 13-CD set from England called Mind Rocker, and we're on there with the Knickerbockers and the Grassroots and all these groups.
You're a psych band, basically.
Yeah.
Did you know that at the time?
No, I didn't know that at the time, but we're all garage rock classic psych
band. Psych band.
So it's funny that my first band when I was youngest and, is very celebrated to this day in books and CDs. Okay. It's hilarious.
Does that help you at the checkout stand?
Not yet.
But celebrate is one thing.
Yeah.
The pay window is nice, too.
That's true.
Yeah, okay. So this is Billy Cardenas came to town, and he started off, because I know Billy, he started off signing, recording mariachi bands for Crown Records. He'd go to a club and tell these guys go down to the studio, and their pay was 50 copies of the LP.
That's more than we got.
Better than you did?
Yeah,
that's what you got?
Oh, we only got about one single each, maybe.
That was your whole payday?
I think so.
Yeah. He couldn't give you a box full of them?
No, I think I would maybe get maybe two or three.
Okay, but not enough to make it, because they would, take them back to the club and sell them.
We were too young to play in clubs. We were playing gigs, but.
Yeah, well, that's how he started out, though. And so there's all these mariachi, this is the time of Herb Alpert, when The Lonely Bowl came out. And
that was like 62.
That mariachi sound was all the rage, so the label's trying to cash in on that. They hired Billy to go out and sign up these, get these bands to come to the studio. And some of them became fairly, very famous. In that world, in that universe. Something you didn't know about Billy, huh?
I heard something about the Crown Records. I didn't know it was mariachis.
Yeah, it absolutely was. And that was to cash in on the Herb Alpert and the Tijuana Brass sound.
Who took it from the mariachis in the first place.
Oh, absolutely. Which ties in with Lou Adler.
That's right.
which we're going to get to.
And ironically, next. I just saw him the other day. I hadn't seen him in 35 years or whenever it was. We worked together in 71. He produced a record of mine. Mm-hmm. And I ran into him at the Roxy Theater last Sunday. And I walked up to him and said hello. And he was very nice. And it was great.
Was he talent scouting or what's the deal?
No. There was a benefit for his Painted Turtle organization. It's a big ranch up in Malibu that takes in children with cancer. It's a very good cause, and so there was some sort of a benefit. And all these heavy metal guys, Slash from Guns N' Roses was there, and you know the guy from Twisted Sister, and friends of mine from Palm Springs were the house band, and that's why I went. And Lou Adler was there, and we talked. It was great.
So he made enough money on recording bands like yours to
Carole
start a foundation.
Carole King, Mamas and the Papas.
Yeah, a few other acts along the way.
Cheech and Chong.
Yeah. Other than that, though, it was strictly on your talent.
That's right, of course.
Okay, so here's this session you did with, let me get the date here.
1971?
Actually, I've got the Cap thing first. And
okay,
then
we'll go to the other later.
Okay, so what's, Cap was after GNP Crescendo, right?
Cap, K-A-P-P, which was an MCA label.
Around
1969, I started pounding the pavement, you know, in Hollywood with my tape of my band at the time. And the name of the band at that time was 1984, based on the George Orwell book. And this was during the psychedelic period in the late 60s. And I wound up in this one office of this guy named Stan Silver, who wound up being who was the husband and manager of Donna Fargo, who had hits in the country field, mm-hmm. Happiest Girl in the Whole USA.
Right.
And he liked the tape, and then he introduced us to Tommy Coe.
That's right. And Tommy, that's how we were in touch. I was asking you about Tommy Coe.
Oh, yeah, Tommy, great guy. And he took us under his wing, and we recorded, we got a deal with Cap Records and did a single. And we were given a song that was written by L.T. Josey, who had written Midnight Confessions, the big grassroots hit.
Now, you don't know L.T. Josey.
No. I think his real name was Jimmy King. He had two names, one he used as a manager and one as a songwriter.
He also was Lou, L-O-U, Josey.
That's right.
He did a doo-wop under that name.
Oh, really?
On Rendezvous Records. See?
Another bit of trivia I didn't know.
Okay.
But so we did this, and this is what's so funny about
it. Clog up your brain if you know too much.
That's true.
I have to empty it every now
but and then. But this is an ironic thing. You know, I was never, as I said, a great businessman. And so here we had our first major, you know, record deal. And I didn't want to do that song because I didn't write it. I was into writing my own thing, doing my own thing, and it wasn't my thing, so I let the drummer sing it. And he did a very good job, but decades later, one of my band members said, you know, when you realize that if that had been a huge hit, he would have been the star and you would have been the backup guy. I go, holy, I didn't even think about that.
Well, I didn't. So, yeah. So who's the drummer?
Ernie Hernandez.
Okay, so this is Ernie Hernandez.
With 1984, my band.
With Mark Guerrero backing him up.
Yes. and it was on Cap Records, 1969.
Lila, is it Lila?
No. This is Three's a Crowd.
Three's a Crowd, okay.
Yeah, Lila is the Lou Adler thing.
Yeah, Three's a Crowd.
Do you have the right CD there?
We've got so many CDs. One way to find out, huh?
We have them all over the place.
Yeah.
I mean 45s.
Yeah, that's right. It's the 45 show.
Hey. You know you're coming on strong, but the things you're doing are too you're coming on down, you see. But I wanna find a place in your mind, so love me tonight. Lila, love me tonight. Lila, love me tonight. Lila, love, you're pushing on. You're pushing on through, you see. But I wanna free this feeling in me, so love me tonight. Lila, love me tonight. Lila, love me tonight. Lila, love me tonight. Lila, love me tonight.
That's all, baby.
Okay, there's that was never released, was it? Yes, it was. Like I say, it was released.
Yes, it was released, 1971.
And that was on Ode Records?
Ode Records, Lou Adler, yes.
Under?
Mark Guerrero was a solo artist.
Oh, okay. And how'd it do?
Pretty well, you know, it did okay. But a good job. I mean, great musicians on it. Hal Blaine, Joe Osborne, the top rhythm section in Hollywood at the time. The Blossoms singing background vocals. Big time session. It was great.
Yeah. And it all takes promotion, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
Yeah. Now, at a certain point in your career, you went from being a, well, you never went from being a full-time musician and promoter of Mark Guerrero to, but you branched out to becoming a historian.
Yeah, you know, I started this website, and it kind of evolved on its own, but it became my passion to try to chronicle all this history of especially the East L.A. sound and Chicano music. And so, you know, I've written many articles and interviewed many people and done radio shows. And
when did you start doing this?
1998, so it's been like 10, 11 years I've been working on it. It's a huge website, markguerrero.net or okay. .com works.
Okay.
Yeah.
And was there a motivator here other than the fact that, you know, if it isn't documented, then nobody will know?
Yeah, the motivation is the fact that there was so much great talent, and because of the niche market and, you know, maybe in some cases discrimination, whatever, these people that deserve to be international stars, many, many of them and many of us, didn't get the opportunity. So it kind of, that fires me up to want to make sure these stories are told, the music survives, that people can hear it.
Do you think there was discrimination?
Well, I mean, no question about it. Question about it.
Give me an example.
Well, some of it was ignorance. Some of it was discrimination. I mean, there's some of it may have been just out and out prejudice, but a lot of it had to do with some of the executives thought, well, you know, Chicano music or Chicano artists are a regional thing. They're not going to sell in New Hampshire or South Dakota, so it's just a local thing, so don't bother with it. There was that aspect. But then there was the ignorance. If you were Mexican-American and your name was Guerrero or Garcia or whatever, and you go to Capitol Records, they'd send you to the Latin division, which was all Spanish, because they didn't understand, well, how can you be an American, and why should you be singing country rock? Or, you know, so they... You know, when I was doing country rock, that's basically what happened. They say, well, what is he doing that for?
So this is a carryover from some of what I'm sure your dad experienced, too.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. And to this day, even it exists to a degree.
I asked, I don't know if it was Willie G or who in the Midnighters, why did you go to a label like Chattahoochee? Everybody was recording for Eddie Davis at the time. And actually, I guess it was the Midnighters, Eddie Torres, that went over to Chattahoochee. And he said, well, that was a... As I recall, and I don't want to put words in anybody's mouth, but that was a label that was separate from the East L.A. scene, and he wanted to have his music, or Eddie Torres or whoever, wanted to have their music placed
beyond that
in a label geographically, you know, the Sunset Strip area.
Right, and even so, the Midnighters were very popular in L.A., and they had some top 10 hits in L.A., but not national. Yeah. You know, the only one that went national was their version of Land of a Thousand Dances, and that only got to number 62.
Yeah. Now, other people have, I don't want to say jumped on the bandwagon, because I know, for instance, Ruben Molina is very serious about what he does, but other people have joined you in documenting the history. Is it more the merrier as far as you're concerned?
Oh, yeah, more the merrier. And I'm glad Ruben's doing what he's doing, because in a sense he's doing what I'm not doing and what I don't have time to do or don't care to do, and that is he's documenting, you know, groups from, you know, San Antonio and Denver and local groups in other regions, and, you know, mm-hmm. I don't have time for that, and I'm basically, I'm glad he's doing it, but I'm mm-hmm. saying I'm just concentrating on Chicano artists that have had national hits and East Side Sound people and great groups that never had that hit but were nevertheless really, really good, great singers that never had a hit that were really good, mainly in the L.A. and East L.A. scene.
Yeah, and I think Ruben's looking for a certain sound, whereas your documentation covers groups in all sorts of different
genres. Yeah, he's kind of more what doo-wop and oldies and lowrider.
So here we go with Ronnie and the Pomona Casuals. Give me a thumbnail. Now, before I do, I should tell you that I have a record by them that nobody seems to know about. It's Sloopy. On Emmy Records before they did. No, wait a second. It's
I know they had some things on Mustang too.
Yeah, but okay. Now I have the record. And I can't think of the title. Anyway, give me a thumbnail on Ronnie and the Pomona Casuals.
Well, they were another band that was managed by Billy Cardenas, and they were one of my favorite bands on the scene back then. And since we had the same manager, we did many gigs together on the same bill. And my band, Mark and the Escorts, we had certain favorites. We liked Ronnie and the Casuals. We liked the Romancers. We liked the Blendells. We liked the Midnighters. You know, there were certain bands that we
But who was
really
Ronnie?
Liked.
Who was Ronnie?
Ronnie Duran. And they were from Pomona, so mm-hmm. they were way east, L.A.
Right.
What made them different, they had an African-American singer, Charles Lett was his name, L-E-T-T. And from what I recall, he was only like 16, 17 years old, and he sounded like, you know, full-grown, you know, R&B singer.
So he did all the vocals?
Yeah, he did most of the vocals. And are you going to play I Want to Do the Jerk?
With any kind of luck?
Yeah.
That's what we'll be
Yeah,
here.
Yeah. But that's but this is an example. He sounds very mature, and I love this record. It still sounds good.
Thank you.
you don't mind, Mark, I'd like to run a couple of observations by you. Now, that's the Romancer, Sloss and Shuffle, right?
Right, yeah.
I mean, Sloopy's in there.
Did it come for Sloss and Shuffle might have been before Sloopy.
Yeah, I think it is.
It is before Sloopy.
Yeah, but I've always, when I hear Sloopy, I hear La Bamba, I hear Louie Louie. You know, I hear...
Right, okay. And also, you know, Sloss and Shuffle kind of gave birth to the Premier's version of Farmer John, the same chord structure and style.
Yeah, well, I hear songs within songs.
Oh, absolutely.
You know? And that's the Romancer's Sloss and Shuffle, which is about, geez. Yeah, it's about then. Max Ubias.
Max Ubias, yeah. And that's, you know, that's a great record. I love it. I loved it then. I love it now. And they were, you know, they're kind of the grandfather of the East Side Sound bands, and they kind of laid down the template, you know.
Did you know that Max had a single under his own name in the School of Ritchie Valens?
Oh, yeah, the Maximilian. He had one under the name Maximilian.
Yeah, and that was like a botched deal with Bob Keane, and he signed the wrong contract with the wrong people, and that messed up the whole deal with Bob Keane. And then
because of that, he had to record instrumentals. He couldn't use his name, and that's how this instrumental album came about. And thank goodness, because it's great. And like I said, that band, Andy Tesso, the guitar player, laid down sort of the style that became the sound.
The foundation of, you know, in the very studio you're sitting in, I had as a guest about a year ago, Carl Fisher of the Vibrations, and we talked at length about My Girl Sloopy, and I asked him, did you know that probably every East L.A. band that had a recording contract did a version of that song?
Hang On Sloopy.
Yep, Hang On, My Girl Sloopy, Hang On Sloopy, whatever you want to call it. He said that Mongo Santa Maria played percussion on the Vibrations version of the original version of that title, My Girl
There Sloopy. Was a My Girl Sloopy also? I didn't know that.
Yeah, by the Vibrations. Okay. Atlantic Records, major hit in 64. The Vibrations being the Jayhawks, who had stranded in the jungle. And and then they became the Vibrations.
Oh.
So I was sort of unclear whether he was aware of how profound that, you know, there's certain songs that East L.A. bands picked up on.
Yeah, yeah.
And went crazy with.
Yeah.
Now, was it in your research, in your interviews, was it a matter of, okay, they did this song, we'll beat them on this song, like Land of a Thousand Dances or Sloopy or other songs, or was it just that it fit and it worked?
Yeah, it fit, and they were just so popular. Songs, I remember everybody was doing 96 Tears when it came out. Everybody was doing that.
But was it to beat the next guy, the last guy that did it?
Well, there was definitely a rivalry and competition. Yeah, you want to do it better.
Yeah.
But certain songs were just perfect for the East L.A. sound and style.
So can you name three or four of them? I mean, we've talked about a couple.
Like that everybody played?
Yeah.
Oh, God. Jeez. Oh, well, you know, of course, Wooly Bully.
Okay, sure.
96 Tears.
I Want to Do the Jerk by Ronnie and the Pomona Casuals, I hear a bit of Ooh Poo Poo Doo.
That could be, you know, because they also worked with the Sisters, who did a version of Ooh Poo Poo Doo.
Here we go.
There you go.
We're off and running. Okay, so now the story of Little Ray, who was the original lead singer for the Midnighters, right?
No, I don't think he was original. I think Willie G was first, but he joined the Midnighters, and for 6 months to a year, they both were singing with the Midnighters, and I happened to witness one of those shows at St. Alphonsus Auditorium, and they were probably the two best singers in East L.A. at the time, and certainly the most popular.
How could two superstars like that coexist?
I don't know, but they did. They had a kind of mutual respect, and even though they were young, they seemed to coexist. But, you know, Ray went off on his own and formed the Progressions, Little Ray and the Progressions, and they went on and did some great things.
Okay, so you especially like his version of the Benny King song.
Oh, yeah. First of all, you know, Little Ray was, in the 60s, great singer, great voice, great performer. He should have been an international star. You know, he was as good as any... You know, as you know, a lot of Motown artists, and again, I think it held him back that he was neither white nor black, neither fish nor fowl, but you know, great singer, great performer, and it's just, you know, that's how things go. But he's one of the guys that I really enjoy writing about and keeping his legacy alive as well. And he's still singing and still really good.
Yeah, and when I interviewed him again on cable TV, he had a band called Ray and the Idols. Uh-huh. Is that still what's going on now? Or
I don't know. It's called something else now. I don't know the name of his group now, but he's still playing.
Okay. Here we go. Little Ray. sort of a taste of rockabilly and Chan Romero out of Billings, Montana, right?
That's right. Yeah, very, very good friend of mine lives in my town about a mile away.
Say hi to him. I've talked to him on several occasions. Really a sweet guy.
Yeah, great guy.
Really like Chan. Now, when I interviewed Bob Keane decades ago, mm-hmm. I said, well, you know, Richie Valens had been taken away from you, and so you signed Chan to replace Richie, right, Bob? Oh, no, I had nothing.
yeah, right,
sure,
right.
Bob. Okay, Bob, yeah, you weren't – Hippie Shake did okay for Chan. I mean, that became a standard and a hit by others.
And the Beatles used to play it.
How do you describe Chan's offbeat approach?
How do you mean offbeat?
I mean, he doesn't fit easily into, you know, he's sort of a rockabilly singer.
Yeah, he's
country type singer.
Well, rockabilly, rock and roll, but you know, he's a true rock pioneer, you know, and he was a great, as you can see, he was only like 19 or something when he did those things, which you just heard, My Little Ruby, and he still can sing his...
So he came to Hollywood from Billings, is that what happened?
Or yeah, he had done a demo. And this local DJ from Billings, I think his name was Don Redfield, I think it was, mm-hmm. Sent it to Bob Keane because, you know, it sounded kind of like Richie Valens. And Bob agreed and flew Chan out and signed him up.
So this is after Richie was killed?
Right after. And it turns out that he met Richie's family, and they loved him, and they brought him into their home, and he slept in Richie's room months after his death. And Richie's clothes were still there, his guitar... You know, and so he lived with the Valenzuela family for a while.
So they adopted him.
They took him in, yeah. So not only did he replace Richie with Bob Keane, but in a sense he was a kind of a surrogate for a while with the Valenzuela family.
But other than that, nothing to do with Richie Valens.
Nothing at all to do with Richie Valens.
Thank you, Bob Keane. Another informative answer. I appreciate that a lot. Okay, so from Chan Romero, who's still performing, still active.
Yeah,
still
he doesn't perform that often, but he can still sing, he still records, and in fact, he recorded a song, I wrote a song for him called Rockin' Like There's No Tomorrow that he recorded a couple of years ago, and did a great job. It's like a Little Richard kind of rocker. It's really great.
Well, he's a true professional. Now, the next one you wanted me to play is a band. It's not a group, it's a band. It's basically the Salas Brothers, or the Salas Brothers are heard on this, but it's a different...
Yeah, I'm not even sure. Are they on it? If anything, they might be singing background.
There's like an ethereal vocal on it.
Yeah.
And I always associate them with it.
It could be.
I'll tell you the association I have with this record. It was used, it was played to death by KRLA as the intro into their news.
Oh, really?
Or something like that. But they played it a lot because it worked in terms of being bumper music between things that were going on.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Well, this is, you know, as you mentioned, you know, the whole theme of this show is sort of songs off the slightly off the beaten track. You know, the three big hits out of East L.A. in the early to mid '60s were Farmer John by the Premiers, La 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 by the Blundells, Land of a Thousand Dances by Cannibal Headhunters, and those are great hits and everything. But everybody's heard those a lot. So we're doing things that were not quite such big hits, but that were nevertheless great and interesting, like Sloss and Shuffle, I Want to Do the Jerk, I Who Have Nothing. And this is another one, Where Lovers Go is a real East L.A. classic, beautiful thing written by Mario Panacqua, the leader of the Jaguars, and he's playing guitar on it.
searching for his land, new and new and every way. UK, oh, yes, you captured.
Okay, that was, we were talking about the Romancers. That's the Romancers from a vocal standpoint, redoing the Etta and Harvey, My Heart Cries,
yeah,
which is a sleeper, and they turned it into a bit of a classic. It wasn't that big a hit when Etta and Harvey had it, because the other side, If I Can't Have You, was the big hit, but man, what a song.
Yeah, and they did beautiful harmonies, and very nice.
Yeah, and Max Abias took to it. Now, we're not negotiating, but we're scrambling to find just the right sound. And we're looking for Darling by the Salas Brothers. I don't know how successful it will be.
I'm not even sure if it's on that collection.
Yeah. Now, my question was Mario Paniagua.
Paniagua
of the
Jaguars.
Of the Jaguars that I guess named the band, but there was a L.A. doo-wop vocal group that had preceded him, the Jaguars, the group that did The Way You Look Tonight. Did he get any flack for that, do you know?
I never heard that, no.
Uh-huh. They were the early integrated doo-wop vocal group, two black members, one Mexican-American and a Sicilian out of Fremont High School, just for the record, and had some hits. It's not that they were not well-known, because they were, but that sort of background voice, that ethereal woo-woo-woo, that's the Salas Brothers.
Could very well be. You know, another thing that a lot of people don't know is that Eddie Davis was on a lot of these records singing. In fact, I heard he was on My Heart Cries. He would jump in and put in high harmonies and stuff.
Yeah, that's how he started.
Yeah.
The first Eddie Davis did a couple of records. He did a duet with Connie Stevens.
Oh, my goodness.
Now, that's a sought-after record. But the first record under his name was I Was a Teenage Brain Surgeon.
You're kidding me.
No, it's a love song.
And was it under the name Eddie Davis? Or what?
Eddie L. Davis, I think.
I did not know that, as Johnny Carson used to say.
He was in the movie Boys Town.
That I heard.
Yeah. And had restaurants. He made his money selling food retail over the counter.
There you go.
And got, you know, I guess his first love was always music. So that's the shorthand Eddie Davis.
And he wound up with like 8 different record labels, small labels.
Rampart.
Pharaoh, Linda.
Linda.
Valhalla.
Gordo. Gordo. Pardon the pun, he got fat off of Gordo. Okay. Okay. Thank you for the courtesy laugh. Okay, now I'm facing a dilemma here because I have 2 track 12s queued up. And every one is one I want, and one is one I don't want, so I'm going to take a chance. No, I'm going to chicken out.
Which one is it?
It's Huggies Bunnies, because La 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 was the big national hit, like you mentioned. But Huggies Bunnies was the...
However, it was first recorded by the Romancers, and it was written by Andy Tesso of the Romancers. They had it on their Sloss and Shuffle album, and then the Blundells did a version, and then the Ambertones later did a version.
Well, let's compare the two versions.
Okay.
First, the Blundells.
Okay.
And then it's on the Romancers.
Let's hope it's on here. Let's see. It may not be. Let's see, because this CD doesn't have all the... It has a combination of their two albums, and it may not have...
Okay, well, let's
Bunnies.
Not do that.
No, I guess we can't.
Yeah, okay. But I guess this was to get Huggy Boy to play the songs.
Probably.
You think?
It probably worked. The scheme worked.
Dan Romero, don't get too comfortable. It's only a minute 34 seconds.
I know.
It starts, it's over.
That's right.
You think he could have put in a guitar break and then...
Well, there was one, but in those days, right, they were short. That was short even for then, but God, yeah. It was the day of the two-minute record, 2:30.
Yeah, and Chan chopped it down to 34. Well, it's shorter, the more chance of airplay, yeah, I guess.
That's right. Bob Keane didn't even try to expand it, you know.
Yeah, well, hey. So we're doing an overview of the East L.A. area by not hitting on any. This is the no-hit East. Well, some of these were hits.
Yeah, but they were not national hits. Monsters. They were not big hits. But yeah. Like I said, they're great records, hit or not. You know, it's not always how good a song is. There are a lot of hits that aren't very good and a lot of songs that are great works of genius that aren't hits. So.
And there's a lot more of the latter than there are of
absolutely.
The former. You know,
absolutely.
There's, you know, just think about how many records, how many separate titles have been recorded in the history of the recording industry.
Exactly.
And we're in the millions.
Exactly.
What do you hear on the radio?
Exactly.
Maybe the 100 biggest hits.
And to get a hit takes luck, timing, sometimes payola. You know.
That really happened, huh?
Absolutely. Oh, yeah, right. You know. You should know.
Yeah, well. Yeah, right. Yeah, every day I depend on it.
No, I don't mean now. I just mean that you're a DJ. You probably heard about it.
I'm the only DJ I can think of that got a personal check for payola.
Oh, really?
When I was at KLON.
Really?
And I turned it over to the station because, you know, public radio stations are constantly fundraising. And the guy that gave it to me always wondered how come he was getting all this stuff from the station. Like, you are now a member. Congratulations.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, it was not worth it to, you know, accept it in my name. But right. He thought, oh, gosh, this is a new angle on the old racket.
So he's a subscriber now.
Yeah, exactly. He couldn't. He thought that was an angle, as it were. Okay, well, unfortunately, we're we still have a lot of music, but we're getting low on time, so I just want to thank Mark Guerrero for coming in. And are you playing anywhere in the near future where people that are listening to this particular internet cast can check you out?
Or? I would just say check my website, markguerrero.net, markguerrero.net, and go to the What's New page.
Okay.
And see what's happening.
Follow the career of. And musician and music historian Mark Guerrero, I want to thank you for coming in. And give me just a couple of words on the Mixtures.
Well, they were a great group. They were an interracial group from up in Ventura. And they were Eddie Davis's, I believe, one of his first bands. And they were very influential. And they became kind of part of the East Side sound, even though they were from up there, because they fit in. They were great.
Thanks for coming in.
My pleasure.
Again, I want to thank Mark Guerrero for coming in and sharing his take on the East L.A. sound and some of the rare songs that he himself recorded. The studios at WPMD.org, Cerritos College, Norwalk, California. It's a 45 show. Thanks for listening. Olive Oil.